Welcome to Center for Spiritual Living, Colorado Springs. I'm Reverend Norm Bouchard, Senior Minister. Thank you for joining our service today. We are so excited to share our community with you. You are joining with so many other people from all around the world who are all part of our virtual community. I'll be back with you at the end of the service to share with you many other resources and classes and podcasts and workshops and tools that will open you for a way to live your best life yet. Right now, I just invite you to sit back, open up your heart and your mind, and enjoy our service. Good morning once again. Well, this month we have been focusing on all kinds of wisdom. Wisdom that comes from the greats, and wisdom that comes from simplicity, and wisdom that comes from all different kinds of dynamics. And today we're going to focus on wisdom of the heart, that the heart is the place in which wisdom truly does reside. It is the place that oftentimes we totally ignore in the life that you and I are living, and yet it is the key and the secret that opens up to all kinds of spiritual avenues. And not only spiritual avenues, but to the wisdom of what it is we need to become and how we need to expand. This past week, I got to celebrate my birthday, which was really lots of fun. And on Monday, Scott had made me clear my calendar so that I could have this birthday thing that I knew nothing about. And so in the morning, I got up and I said, okay, how do you want me to dress? And he said, well, I'll let you know. I hate that. And he was an utter pleasure in doing this thing to me. So anyway, he finally tells me to dress in layers, and I dress in layers and the whole thing. And then we get in the car, and we're on our way, and I'm sort of guessing. I had one or two things in mind that I thought I wanted to do, and one that I've wanted to do for a long time, which I've wanted to do is zip lining for a long, long time. And I have a friend of mine, Larry, and his wife, Anita, who are friends of ours, and Larry and I have been talking about doing zip lining, and Larry has done it several different times. So he said, you know, I want to do this with you. And I said, okay. So I thought it was either zip lining or there's this other thing that I want to check out where you float inside of this egg in this water stuff. So I thought it's going to be either one of those dynamics. So we're in the car, but I'm looking and dressing in layers. I think, I don't think I'm going to be floating in an egg today. And so we're finally maneuvering, and Scott puts it into the navigation system, and I begin to realize that we are heading toward the Broadmoor, which I really own because there are B's all over that place, the letter B, which is really my initial. So I have assumed that the Broadmoor belongs to me. So we start moving, and then long story short, as we go to park, he tells the parking attendant that we're going to be doing zip lining and that we're going to be having lunch at the Broadmoor, for which part I am totally excited to do. And I turned to him and I said, I bet Larry and Anita are going to join us. And they did. So we wait in the lobby for them to come. So anyway, we get ready to do this dynamic, and we are guided by two people who are barely through puberty, and which is exciting and scary all at the same time, because they're really sort of, and they're these really funny guys, and they're telling all these stories, and they're really cool. And so we have to hike in a little bit, so we hike in a little bit. And as we're hiking in, the topic comes up. Carl, one of the guides, says, what do you guys do for a living? And Larry says, well, I'm an engineer. And I said, I'm a minister, which always causes this stillness in the midst of it, because, you know, whatever issues people have. And so the guy that was behind me, Sam, then it started this whole conversation about, you know, and zip lining, if you die, you could go to hell or you can go to heaven. And it's all this dynamic going on. And I'm saying, well, we don't believe in that. And so the guy behind me, Sam, says, so by the way, what do you do for a living? He hadn't heard a single thing, and he's listening to this heaven and hell stuff. And I said, I'm a minister. And so we start to talk about what Center for Spiritual Living is and what we believe and what we teach. He said he was supposed to be here this morning, but he's not. So, but I have his phone number, so I will now impress guilt, which we don't believe in, about why he wasn't here to be here. So anyway, we hike in and we get to this place, and we do a practice run. And they're going through this whole practice run, and they're saying, you'll need to apply the brake, and they keep talking about the brake and keep talking about the brake. And then they say to us, do you have any questions? And I said, yeah, where in the double, you know what, is the break? Because they didn't tell me where the break was. And so he says, oh, we'll get to that. And so we do this little practice run between these two trees, and I'm in my harness, and we go, and I almost run into the tree. And then I find out that my hand is actually the break, that you wear a pair of gloves and you put your hand on the cable, and that's how you break. So anyway, we go to do the first one, and I was excited but nervous at the same time. And I sort of missed the education part about you're not supposed to ride the brake, but I rode the brake. So I'm coming down the very first one, and it's swooping, and he's telling us the first one you'll go about 30 miles an hour, and there are six of them, by the way, the Broadmoor, and you go over the Seven Falls, which is really quite beautiful. But I'm very aware of having my hand on the brake. And so the whole time, there's this landing spot that you're going toward. And as you go to land, the guy's going like this to me, which we didn't practice those. So I didn't know what the hell that meant, but he was doing this dynamic to me. And I'm like, oh, my God. And so I'm holding on to the brake, holding on to the brake, holding on to the brake. And I get there, and I land, and it was not graceful. But I landed, and I thought, well, I made it. And he said to me, lesson number one. You need to take your hand off the brake. And I thought to myself, oh my God, there is the life lesson. You see, we oftentimes go through life with our hand on the brake. And all the other runs from that point on were exhilarating, and I didn't need to apply the brake until just before I landed. So I want to show you that I really did do this. So this is my friend Larry and I in our harness. And I want to show you what happens when you take your hand off the brake.
Video's rolling, my friend.
I landed right on my 2 feet, properly right on the top step when I learned to let go of the brake. So, when we are talking about wisdom of the heart, most of us have our brake on our heart. Most of us protect that heart. And when we protect our heart and when we have our hand on the brake, we can't experience the ride that we came here to have. And so this morning, I thought it might be good for us to look at ways in which we, first of all, could take the brake off the heart and open our heart up to life. And I also want to spend some time looking at what are the skills that we need to be able to listen to the heart, to listen to that which is speaking to us, which is echoing in the chamber of our consciousness that which we need to be, that God essence that resides in the heart, not in the head. We spend so much time in our head. And so we're going to learn some pretty powerful skills today, and we have a very powerful guest speaker who I absolutely believe was divinely given to me through Deb Bauer this week. You're going to learn some incredible things about heart and what heart really is all about. What I know is the seat of knowledge is in the head of wisdom in the heart. That's really where it resides. The heart is simply an arrow, and it demands aim in order to truly land. It means that you and I have to guide our heart. Because there is wisdom in the heart that wants to speak, but you and I oftentimes don't listen. And we're not guiding it. And we think that life is happening to us, and that is not the truth. We are the ones directing it. we either do it consciously or we do it unconsciously. And the wisdom in the heart is where all of this really begins to reside. And in the spiritual journey that you and I are called to live in life, the spiritual journey is really the unlearning of fear and the acceptance of love. The acceptance of what the heart is trying to communicate, where God resides, where all of direction happens, where wisdom really is echoing and giving us all kinds of keys to open up what is really happening in our life. What I know is if you can change the rhythm of the heart, you can change the information that goes out into the body and into the brain. Now, you have heard me speak about this before. I have said this in 50 million ways, but let me say it one more time. Feelings plus thoughts equal outcome. Say it with me. Feelings plus thoughts equal outcome. We are oftentimes misled to think if we change our thinking, we will change our life. That is not the truth. Feelings are first. First and foremost. And they have been directing this forever. We think if we can do all these positive affirmations, if we can change what we're saying in our minds, that we're going to manifest something different in our life. And I can tell you in my own personal life, nothing ever changed until I changed my heart. Until I moved my feelings around it. And then all of a sudden I began to notice that things are orchestrated. So the brain is simply a servant to the feelings. It is not the primary, and we treat it as if the primary piece really begins to happen. And it is not, it is the servant. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that today. The heart is always doing the talking, giving information to the brain and the body systems. It is a heart time on the planet, and it's time to listen to your heart. I can tell you that as I sit and do chemo, I don't think about chemo. I feel positive thoughts. I feel love energy in my heart speaking to myself. It's not a head thing. It's a feeling thing, which makes all the difference in the world. So I was dressed as, if you saw me on Facebook, you saw I was dressed as a fireman this time, which was really interesting. And I had trouble with my outfit. My outfit was, it comes from China. And so an extra large in China is not an extra large in America. That's what I have learned. So I was duct taped from top to bottom and could barely move in the process. But anyway, so I always have some encounter with somebody doing something. This time, the encounter was really, I had two really powerful experiences this past week. One was with my nurse. She and I had this heart-to-heart conversation, and she said to me, "You know what makes you so different?" And I said, "I don't, what makes me so different?" And she said to me, I don't know if you've noticed this, but you shift the energy when you come in the room. No other person does it. You walk in and the whole place gets excited." And I said, "Well, I thought it was because of the free candy I'm handing out." And she said, no. She said, "You have a heart connection. You have a heart." And she's right, I do. I have a heart connection. And I have learned that I have been successful in dealing with cancer because of my heart connection, because of my feelings of what's really going on in the process. The second encounter I had was with a gentleman, I think he was around 95 years old, and I was standing outside waiting for Andrea to pick me up, and I swear to God, she's late every single time on purpose, because there's always some encounter that I have with somebody. So I'm standing, this grouchy old guy comes up, and he said, "Are you a fireman?" And I said, "No, I'm not a fireman. I'm just dressed up. Why would you do something like that?" And I said, "I dress up for chemo." "Well, that's kind of dumb." And I said, "Well, why do you do that?" And I said, "Well, because it causes positive energy and, you know, it's just wonderful peace." And he says to me, "Well, that's ridiculous. Let me show you my..." So he takes his baseball cap off and he tells me he had cancer removed from his head and he has a great big hole in his head. And he's sharing to me, he goes, "Yeah. You just got to brace up and you got to do it." And I said sarcastically, "Well, I guess they didn't remove your grouchiness." And he starts to laugh and he said, "Don't tell my wife that." And of course, he goes over to his red truck and I immediately went over because his wife was sitting there and I said, I noticed that I was telling your husband that they didn't remove the grouchiness out of his head, and she said, no, there's no hole big enough to do that. That's what she said. Yeah. Joy. All that goes on in chemo. Would you ever think that goes on in chemo? That goes on in chemo. Heart. What are you bringing your heart to in life? Because the heart is doing the talking. The heart is the holder of the wisdom. And so there are three aspects I want us to play with today. Number one, the heart is always doing the talking, not the brain. I want us to get really clear about that. If we can shift our feelings, the brain will kick in. Two, the heart speaks through your emotions, consciousness, and intuition. That's where it really begins to vibrate. And third but not least, you can change the rhythms of the heart, changing the outcome of your life, changing the outcome of your very life. So wherever you feel stuck in life, wherever you feel that something is not moving, wherever you need healing in your life, wherever you need forgiveness in your life, wherever any of that stuff is, it can be changed by paying attention to the heart. To the heart. The heart is always doing the talking, not the brain. I want to share with you a pretty powerful story. You see, the heart is not limited by past, present, or future, because God resides in the heart. So it's not limited by something, which means that you can do stuff ahead of time that you are clueless about that is going to affect something later on, because the heart has no parameters and is not stuck in a present tense. It's not stuck in a past, and it's not stuck in a future. If you think I'm mistaken, listen to this powerful story. Linda British literally gave herself away. Linda was an outstanding teacher who felt that if she had the time, she would like to create great art and poetry. When she was 28, however, she began to get severe headaches, and her doctors discovered that she had an enormous brain tumor. They told her that her chances of surviving an operation were about 2%. Therefore, rather than operate immediately, they chose to wait 6 months. She knew she had great artistry in her. So during those 6 months, she wrote and drew feverishly. All of her poetry except one piece was published in magazines, and all of her art except one piece was shown and sold at some leading galleries. At the end of the 6 months, she had the operation. The night before the operation, she decided to literally give herself away. In case of her death, she wrote a will in which she donated all of her body parts to those who needed them. Unfortunately, Linda's operation was fatal. Her eyes went to an eye bank in Bethesda, Maryland, and from there to one recipient in South Carolina. A young man, age 28, went from darkness to sight. That young man was so profoundly grateful that he wrote to the eye bank thanking them for existing. It was only the second thank you that the eye bank had received after giving out over 30,000 eyes. Furthermore, he said he wanted to thank the parents of the donor. They must be indeed magnificent folks who have had a child who would give her eyes away. He was given the name of the British family and decided to fly out to see them on Staten Island. He arrived unannounced and he rang the doorbell. After hearing his introduction, Mrs. British reached out and embraced him. She said, "Young man, if you've got nowhere to go, my husband and I would love for you to spend your weekend with us." He decided to stay. And as he was looking around Linda's room where he was staying, he saw that she had read Plato. He read Plato in Braille. She had read Hegel. He began to read Hegel in Braille. The next morning, Mrs. British was looking at him and says, "You know, I'm sure I've seen you somewhere before, but I don't know where." All of a sudden, she remembered. She ran upstairs and pulled out the last picture that Linda had ever drawn. It was her portrait of her ideal man. The picture was virtually identical to this young man, who had received Linda's eyes. Then her mother read the last poem Linda had written on her deathbed, and it read, "Two hearts passing in the night, falling in love, never able to gain each other's sight." The heart knew. The heart knew the whole time. That power, that essence, that voice within her knew. Because the heart is always doing the talking. She listened. And through her artwork and through her poetry, was able to transform not only her own life, but the life of that young man. Always listen to your heart, because even though it's on your left side, it's always right. Always. It's never wrong. I wrote this the other day as I was thinking about listening to my heart. Listening from the heart is incredibly relaxing, because you stop using your mind to analyze, to plan, to organize, and to figure everything out. What a relief. As you let go of all that is on your mind's activities, you are able to relax into a presence where there is no trouble and no resistance. That's why we offer meditation here. Why we teach the classes that we do. To get out of our heads and to jump into our hearts. When you live from your heart, you begin to touch into the universal experience of love. Because love is the source of everything. It's the fabric which makes up our very existence. Those who discover love always discover God. Our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, wrote, "Love is the central flame of the universe, nay, the very fire of life itself. It is written that God is love and that we are the express likeness of this eternal being." Love is that central flame that touches everything. It stimulates the emotions. It renews the soul and proclaims the very spirit of God itself. Those who discover love always discover God. That's why we need to live in our heart. Because we are the expression of God. We are called to live there. Because it is only with the heart that one can see rightly what is essentially invisible to the eye. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. It is there that the wisdom lies. Listen to your heart. Listen to your inner voice of wisdom. Listen to what you know, what is right for you, because it will speak in your heart. It doesn't get clogged in the brain. That's where it stays. I want to introduce you a very powerful person who I just met this week via the phone. Her name is Anne Marie Clear. I love that her last name is Clear. And I want to tell you a little bit about Anne Marie. Anne Marie is a teacher, coach, workshop leader, and speaker. She holds an MA in counseling and is a certified heart math trainer, which you're going to find a lot about today, and is a coach. Anne Marie shows you how to use the power of your heart to transform your life and to live authentically. When you live courageously from the heart and stand in your value, your life becomes integrated and whole. Anne Marie Clear is the founder and president of Clear Directions. For over 25 years, she has helped world-class scientists, business professionals, and people live their best life by learning to live by their heart first. Please join me in welcoming Anne Marie. Anne Marie, come on right up. Let me pull a little chair over here. Good morning again.
Good morning. I'm sitting in such appreciation of your talk today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So Debbie Bauer, who is on our leadership council, we were having a leadership council meeting, and she said to me, Norm, I met this woman, and I think what she does really aligns with what we teach. Mm-hmm. And so she began, I said, well, send me her information. I'll check her out. And so I did, and I got really excited, and I called Debbie, and I said, do you have a phone number on her? And she said, I do. So we ended up having a conversation on the phone, which was just empowering. So please tell us a little bit about what you do and about particularly in heart math and the dynamic of the heart.
Sure. As I was mentioning to Norm when I met him this morning, trying to talk about heart math is like trying to talk about what spirituality is. It's a little complex, and after over 25 years, I still haven't figured out a simple way to do it. But I would say that heart math is the most beautiful integration of science and spirituality. And heart math, when they discovered the tools for the heart, spent over 20 years doing scientific research because they wanted to bring everybody into the fold of the heart. And some people need to go to through the head to get to the heart. They need that credibility with the science. So at the short end, you can bring people into the heart by saying these tools will help you reduce your stress. Some people will use the tools to help them with their performance. They're also the deepest pathway to spirituality. And when I listened to your talk and you mentioned when you wear your uniforms for your chemo, what it brought to mind was that the heart has an electrical field, and it's the strongest field in the body, 40 to 60 times greater than the field in the brain. And it can be measured at least up to 3 feet away, so that whatever you're feeling, whether it's fear, frustration, love, or care, it radiates out into the field around you. So when you go in your uniform and your costume and you bring love in your heart, you are literally filling the field around you with that love, and it affects the people around you. So one of the phrases heart math uses a lot is, what are you feeding the field? What are you feeding the field today? And that when I get up every morning, regardless of what's on my to-do list, I only have one job, and that's to feed the field with love. And if I've done that, it's been a good day. It's been a good day. And it's not as easy as it sounds. We all want to be loving, but then we have nervous systems that without our permission catapult us into frustration, overwhelm, pressure, fear, guilt. Anybody ever have those things happen today? Time pressure. And those emotions, we feed the field with those too. And we cannot leave those emotional states by telling ourselves, don't let something bother you. Your brain cannot remove you from those states. And what happens is, if you tell yourself, I just won't let that bother me, what happens is you've checked out, and from the neck down, you're stressed and don't know it, but everybody around you does. So to shift into the heart is a physiological shift. You have to shift your physiology because stress is a physiological state. So shall we just walk through a very quick heart math tool? Would you all like to do that? The most simple basic heart math tool is quick coherence. Now, when I teach this to scientists, I have to teach 2 hours of science before we do this 30-second technique. But I'm hoping you guys will take a leap of faith with me.
Absolutely.
So I'll talk you through the 3 steps, and then we'll do it together. The first step is, after you notice whatever you're feeling, you just pause and focus your attention on your heart. Because as Reverend Norm said, it's your heart rhythms you're trying to shift, because they're very different when you're in a state of stress. So you just pause and focus on your heart. Then the next step is to imagine that your breath is coming in and out through your heart. 3 to 5 seconds inhaling, 3 to 5 seconds exhaling. This step calms the nervous system down. It brings order to the two branches of your nervous system. That's why meditation works. But we don't want to stop there, because there's so much power in activating a heart feeling. That's where all the profound changes come from. The one that's very easy for most people to activate and is very powerful in terms of shifting your heart rhythms is the feeling of appreciation. So you feel appreciation for someone or something in your life. It could be your favorite food. For me, I have a 5-year-old chocolate lab named Sadie. And every time I feed her or I come home from being away, she yowls for 20 seconds. I won't make an idiot of myself here and show you how she yowls. But I love her yowl. And I can fill my heart with joy just at having that experience with her. So you feel the feeling. It's not enough. Thinking is not going to create the shift. You have to feel the appreciation. So if you want to close your eyes while you're learning, please do. But eventually you want to learn to do it with your eyes open, or it won't be available to you all the time. So just pause for a moment. And focus your attention on the area around your heart, in the center of your chest. Imagine your breath is flowing in through your heart and out through your heart at a pace that's comfortable and easy for you. Now feel a feeling of appreciation for someone or something in your life. And before you open your eyes, just take a moment to notice your mental state, your emotional state, and how you feel in your body. And you can open your eyes. What did you notice when you did that simple technique?
I noticed my whole body just sort of calmed down. Mm-hmm. I became present. There was an I am moment where I realized I was in my body and I was feeling my heart and I was totally present.
Yeah. And it's what we want all the time,
totally.
Isn't it? What we all really want is to love and care the way we always want to. And what gets in the way of love and care is those feelings we don't know how to shift. Frustration, pressure, time pressure, irritation, and we're all subject to them. I certainly am when it's 10 o'clock at night and it's 15 degrees out and my dog cannot find the perfect place to go to the bathroom. You know, irritation rises up, and so I can either let the irritation take over, or what do? I pause, I start breathing in and out through my heart and activating a feeling of appreciation. Because that's the choice I have. How do I show up for this moment that's not exactly as I'd like it to be? And what heart math does is it gives you lots of tools and techniques to access this power in your heart. And I really love all the things that you shared in your talk today, because the heart actually has a brain in it, and there's a whole field of science that studies the brain and the heart called neurocardiology. And HeartMath, for at least 10 years now, has been doing research on the science of intuition. And when you talk about wisdom in the heart, it's really quite literal. They hook people up to all these gadgets that measure the heart rhythms, the brain rhythms, and then they generate randomly pictures that show on a computer, and nobody knows what pictures are going to show. Not the scientists, not the people in the experiment. And what they've learned, and it's been repeated by other researchers, is that at least 10 seconds before the picture flashes on the computer, the heart knows whether it's an upsetting or peaceful picture. Because the heart rhythms start to shift to incoherence when it's an upsetting picture, and shift to coherence when it is a peaceful picture. And the heart knew before the picture flashed. So then the question becomes, how does your heart find you? Because spirit talks to you through your heart. And as my heart math mentor keeps saying to me, your spirit's got to be able to find you. And spirit can't find us when there's a lot of noise in our system from frustration and pressure and all the things we think we have to figure out and do. Spirit finds us when we activate a heart feeling. Care, appreciation, kindness, love. When we experience and feel those feelings rather than think them. That's what keeps our signal to spirit open and alive. And you can stop once an hour and do 20 seconds of heart breathing, activate a feeling of appreciation, and have your GPS to spirit alive and open. And then spirit brings conveniences and blessings into your life. When I went to this networking event, I just happened to sit beside Debbie. And by the end of the event, and I thought, she's somebody I want to get to know. So I asked for her card. We had lunch together. She told me about this church, and I said, oh, I have to come to this church. I moved to Colorado Springs in March of 2020. Not a great time to meet people. And so I was already planning on coming, and I was in my home, and the phone rings. And it's Reverend Norm, and I thought, my signal to spirit is really powerful today. What a blessing has been brought into my life to be able to have this conversation with all of you. Spirit brings us, heart math, they call them conveniences. What a convenient thing to have Reverend Norm call me and invite me here. I feel so blessed.
I want to tell you about, I told the congregation this story. It happened with a woman that I met at Rocky Mountain Cancer Center. And prior to that, I had been doing some work with Dr. Linda Bachman, who does a lot with past life regression and in-between lives. And so I wanted to have this experience, and I did. And one of the questions I asked in the past life regression was about the cancer. And I had in my head thought that the cancer came back. It was in remission for a while, and then it came back. So the first time I thought it was about, forgiveness. So I did all this forgiveness work. And then the second time when it came back, I thought it was about surrender. And so I'm asking this guide on the other side about this question. And I'm telling the guide, and the whole time I'm telling the guide, which is just nothing but an energetic spirit that's vibrating, and I'm witnessing and experiencing it and blown away by simply that experience. But the whole time he was doing this no to me, just no, 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 no. And I was really disturbed that, because I thought I had done all this personal work around the cancer. So then I said, so what's up with the cancer? And he said to me, you were sent to the planet to teach. And your cancer is just another vehicle for you to teach. So just teach. And the next chemo that I went to, the nurse brought in this woman into the Rocky Mountain Cancer Center. Now, when you go in, they never tell you where to sit. They just say, pick a seat. But she, this nurse, directly brought her to me and sat her next to me, and she said, you need to sit next to Norm today. And it was really clear it was the woman's first time. She was very distraught and very emotional. And, the first time you do chemo, it's like drinking out of a fire hose. You're trying to just grapple with all the information and what's going to happen to your body. And so I'm watching her, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, my. So the nurse walks away, and I say to her, it's your first time. And she said, yes. And then she bursts into tears and says, I've not slept in over a month since the diagnosis. I can't get it out of my head and the whole thing. And I said to her, I can help you with that if you're willing. And she said she would be willing. And so I said, well, let's let the nurse hook you up first. And so she did. And then I turned to her and I said, I want you to close your eyes. And I want you to place your feet on the ground. And I want you to just breathe with me. So we did some breathing. And then I said to her, I want you to recall a time in your life when you felt so in charge of your life, when you felt so powerful, when you felt that you were just living the life you were meant to live. And I said, and when you recall that experience, I want you to tell me about it. And so she kept her eyes closed and she told me about this job that she had been in where she loved the people she was working with and she felt respected and she felt totally in charge. And she went on for about 10 to 15 minutes. And then I said to her, so I want you to take a deep breath with me again. And so she did. And then I said to her, so I want you to open your eyes. And I said, so for the last 15 minutes, you have not thought about cancer. That's how you're going to get through this. You're going to get through this in this way. So this woman, I do see her periodically. She's doing very, very well. But as I left that day, the nurse said to me, Norm, I owe you an apology. I didn't mean to dump this woman on you. But she said, this voice in my head when I went to get the woman said, sit her next to Norm, sit her next to Norm. Now, the reason I tell you that story is you absolutely hit on it a few minutes ago, and that is the heart is not limited by our time frame and by that little piece. So what I found so fascinating when I talked with you on the phone the other day was all this, I felt so affirmed about, because I'm teaching this stuff, but I have no scientific proof of it. I'm just having this experience and I'm teaching about it. So I'm just blown away by what you do and that you work with scientists, because they are a very tough crowd. Them and engineers are like the worst crowds on the planet, if there are any engineers in the space. So tell me more about the science piece and how you do that.
The science piece is really important because people want to feel this is not new agey stuff.
Right.
That the heart is actually has a lot of substance. So we start by looking at that your body can be in a coherent state or an incoherent state. So with the story you just told, that woman came to chemo very incoherent. And you helped her get coherent with that meditation you took her through. When your body is incoherent, your heart generates a pattern that looks like an earthquake. It's literally telling you that the two branches of your nervous system are having a power struggle with each other. The heart is speeding up and slowing down in a very irregular pattern. That, it's called the heart rate variability pattern. That pattern goes up into your brain, tells your brain your body's in danger, which it may not be. It does this whether the danger is real or imagined. And when it does, it says, well, let's send in the troops. Over 1,400 chemical reactions are released in your body, preparing you to fight or run or freeze. It also changes the place in your brain where you process information. So instead of processing it through the executive centers where you can be reasonable and rational, you're now processing through the emotional centers so that you're hypervigilant, you're looking for threat, danger, you're prone to anger and being very territorial. When you generate a coherent rhythm, which you generate when you feel feelings like appreciation, care, love, it looks more like a sine wave. And again, as you're just listening, just take some breaths in and out through your heart with your eyes open as you're listening right now. Feel appreciation for something in your life so you can begin to generate those coherent rhythms like a sine wave. That pattern goes up into the brain, and that too alters how your brain functions. For the positive, it facilitates brain functioning. It facilitates creativity, innovation. It also gives you access to intelligence that's not available any other way, because your brain is really just a pattern recognition machine. It tells you what you see today and how it compares to something you know from the past. Real intelligence comes from getting coherent and activating the power in your heart. And, you know, we even have biofeedback technology that you can use to see what your heart rhythms look like in real time. That's something we could do very easily here. And so you get to see what state you're in and how it impacts your body. And it's generating these coherent patterns. If you were to just, you know, do the quick coherence, and then you go on with your day for the next hour or two, it has what's called a carryover effect. An hour later, if stress hits, the benefit you gave yourself from doing quick coherence an hour ago will carry over and put you in a better position to handle that situation and remain coherent instead of becoming incoherent. So I can go in front of a group of scientists and teach all this physiology, and they will, I mean, really, when you get a bunch of physicists and engineers in the room breathing through their heart, you know you've really accomplished something.
Yeah.
You know? And they will do that because they have buy-in, because HeartMath has, you know, Stanford and all kinds of other people on their board. They have all kinds of universities replicating their research. So once I give it this stamp of credibility, they will use the tools. Now they're accessing heart intelligence. They just call it stress reduction.
That's wonderful.
But it's still heart intelligence.
That's wonderful.
So you speak the language that people will then receive, so then more people. HeartMath's mission, not the one they publish, but on the inside, is for the planet to be at least 51% love, operating from love, and then the whole world will shift.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I can't, isn't she amazing? I just like,
brilliant. Thank you.
So I want to thank you for spending some time with us today, and I want to bring you back to do a workshop with us.
I would love to
do
that.
So we're going to bring her back to do this workshop. So please join me in thanking Anne Marie for her time. Wonderful. I have the best job on the planet. I just, you know, I was sitting, when you were talking about appreciation, I was beginning to think about where else can I do what I do and run into people that I run into and get these life-transforming experiences. And so I'm just in such gratitude about that. To close out my talk today, the final piece I want us to do, just from what Anne-Marie, just the simple exercise that she taught us of what if we made it our mission this week to take that exercise and do it this week? And to try this week to always live from your heart. Just do an experience of really trying to live from that place. The story I'm going to close the sermon with today is from a priest that I met when I was a Catholic priest many years ago, Father John Powell, who is a professor that I got to meet at Loyola University. And he told this story, and it's such the key component of what we're really about today. Father John Powell, Loyola Professor University, once had a student named Tommy in his theology of faith class. And Tommy happened to be an atheist. And when Tommy turned in his final exam, he asked Father Powell in a cynical tone, "Do you think I'll ever find God?" Father Powell decided instantaneously in shock therapy, and he answered Tom empathetically, "No." Surprised, Tommy shot back, "Why not? I thought that's the product you were pushing." Father Powell allowed Tommy to get 5 steps from the classroom door and then called out, "Tommy, I don't think you'll ever find God, but I'm absolutely certain that God's going to find you." Father Powell and Tommy did not see each other for several years, and then he received a sad report that Tommy had terminal cancer. When Tommy eventually visited Father Powell, he was not the Jesuit that he had remembered before. When Tommy walked into my office, his body was very badly wasted and his long hair had fallen out as the result of chemotherapy. But his eyes were bright and his voice was firm. And for the first time, I believed that Tommy was experiencing God. Tommy did confirm that he had cancer in both lungs and had only a few weeks to live. Father Powell asked Tommy, "What's it like being only 24 and dying?" And Tommy answered, well, it could be worse, like being 50 and having no values or ideals, or being 50 and thinking that booze and seducing women and making money are the real biggies in life. Tommy added, but what I really came in to see you about is something you said to me on the last day of class. I asked you if you thought I would ever find God, and you said no, but God's going to find you. And Tommy continued, but when the doctors removed the lump from my groin and told me that it was malignant, that's when I got serious about locating God. And when the malignancy spread into my vital organs, I really began banging bloody fists upon the bronze doors of heaven. But God did not come out. In fact, nothing happened. Did you ever try for a long time with such great effort with no success, and you get psychologically glutted and fed up with trying, and then you quit? Tommy further narrated to Father Paul, I decided to spend what time I had left doing something more profitable. I thought about what you and your class had said, and I remembered something else you had said. The essential sadness is to go throughout life without loving. But it would be almost equally as sad to go through life and leave the world without telling those you love that you love them. Tommy said he had started to do that. I began with the hardest one, my father. He was reading the newspaper when I approached him. Tommy describes the encounter. Dad, I would like to talk to you. I mean, it's really important. The newspaper came down 3 inches slowly. What is it? Dad, I love you. I just wanted you to know that. Tom smiled at Father Powell as he said it with obvious satisfaction. The newspaper then fluttered to the floor, and then Tommy's father did two things he could never remember him ever doing. His father cried, and his father hugged him. Tommy added, we talked all night, even though he had to go to work the next morning. It felt so good to be close to my father, to see his tears, to feel his hug, and to have him love me. It was much easier with my mother and my little brother. They cried with me too, and we hugged each other and started saying really nice things to each other. We shared the things we had been keeping secret for so many years. I was only sorry about one thing, that I had waited so long. Here I was, just beginning to open up to all the people I had actually been close to. And then one day I turned around, and God was there. God didn't come to me when I pleaded. Apparently, God does things in God's own time and on God's own hour. But the important thing is that God was there. Spirit found me, right there. He found even after I stopped looking. Father Powell gasped as he heard Tommy's story, and he said, I think you're saying something really important is much more universal than you realize. To me, at least, you are saying that the surest way to find God is not to make God a private possession, a problem solver, or an instant consolation in time of need, but rather, if you want to find God, open up to love. You know, the Apostle John said that. He said, God is love, and anyone who lives in love ends up living with God. The Jesuit then asked Tom a favor. He said, would you come into my present theology of faith class and tell them the story that you told me? If I tell them, it won't be the same. Tommy replied, ouch, I was not ready for that, but I'm more than willing to come to your class. Tom thought about it and gave him a call. In a few days, Tom called and said he was ready for class and he wanted to do this for God and for Father Powell. So the class got scheduled. However, Tommy never made it. He had another appointment that was far more important. Who do you have to say I love you to this week? Who do you have to permeate that field? What needs that field to be permeated this week? Because you are called. You and I are called to live from our heart. There is within the human heart a quality of intelligence which has been known to surpass that attributed to the human mind. To give pleasure to a single heart by a single act is better than 1,000 heads of bowing in prayer. You want to pray? Listen to your heart. Open the heart. Spiritual opening is not a withdrawal to some imagined realm of safe cave. It's not a pulling away, but a touching of all the experience of life with wisdom and with a heart of kindness without any sort of separation. This week, let us tap into the wisdom of the heart. Let us remember the heart is doing the talking, not the brain. Let us learn to listen. Let us learn and remember the simple exercise that we were taught today, that the heart is speaking through the emotions, the consciousness, and the intuition, permeating out a field of energy that can transform life. And last but not least, you and I are in charge of changing the rhythm of our heart. And as we do so, we shall change the world. Pray with me. Ah, there is such a beauty in life. It is found in the heartbeat. Place your hands on your heart and feel it. Oh, it is found in the beauty of the moment, in the capture of an eye, in the moment of appreciation, in the moment of a joy, of gratitude, of love. That is God. That is the divine essence. It is present right here, right now. And what I know is that I am one with this divine presence. I know that each and every one of us in this sacred space, here and virtually, we are one with this divine presence. We are the expression of it. And we are here to express the love. So what I know and affirm for us this day is that we go forth from this place opening our heart. We go forth from this place, permeating and residing in the power of our heart. And so we let go of all frustration. We let go of all fear. We let go of all lack of forgiveness. And we just pause and we breathe. And we remember who we are. That we are the stations of love, the expression of the divine, that we have come here to learn how to love, to express love, and to give that love away. I claim and know that for us this day. I claim and know it for our world. I know that as we send out that field of love, that our world is transformed. I send love to all different parts of the world that are troubled. I know that we stand in that place of love for healing for all those that need healing in any sort of way in our community this day. I am in such gratitude that we have been given the wisdom of the heart. I say thank you, Spirit. Thank you for speaking through our hearts. Thank you for allowing us to hear the message today. Thank you for the gift of Anne-Marie, who absolutely shared her wisdom today. And knowing that I stand in this place of gratitude, I simply release this prayer, knowing that what I have spoken is already activating a field. It is sending out love. It is transforming our hearts, and it is transforming our lives. Knowing this is the truth, I release it unto the universal law that knows only to take what I am feeling, experiencing, and knowing, and manifesting it. What a joy it is to release this prayer, knowing it is already done. And so with one voice, together we learn and sing and affirm together the truth of this affirmation. I am the place where God lives, moves and breathes and has his being. I am the place where God shows up. I am the place where God lives, moves and breathes and has its being. I am the place where God shows up. I am the place where God lives, moves and breathes and has its being. I am the place where God shows up. Yes, I am the place where God lives, moves and breathes and has its being. I am the place where God shows up. I am the place where God lives, moves and breathes and has its being. I am the place where God shows up. I am the place where God lives, moves and breathes and has its being. I am the place where God shows up. So it is. Thank you for being a part of our virtual community today. I hope you enjoyed our service. We realize that you have many choices in your spiritual quest, and for that very reason, we want you to explore our community. Have you ever had the feeling that you want more out of life, more prosperity, more of who you are called to be? Well, you have found the right place. We at Center for Spiritual Living Colorado Springs teach a powerful set of spiritual principles that have continued to change so many people's lives for the better. Imagine living the changes you want to see in the world without fear or guilt or past experiences. We invite people through classes and podcasts and workshops, services and personal spiritual development to discover how powerful and prosperous you really are. Our resources are available in person or virtual. Check out our website, and I invite you to engage in all of our resources. Join us in creating your best life yet. I look forward to seeing you again and again.